listening to the Tech Gaming Podcast, World 8-9er. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me is our usual troop of awesome incarnate. First up, the man who hails from the land of Popeyes and boob beads, Sean Nola Kirkland.
I could go for some Popeyes.
I could go for some boob beads. Boob beads.
Popeyes has like crack in it. You eat it once, and for weeks you're like, "Oh God, I need some more fucking Popeyes." I gotta get some.
Really? For me, it's anti-crack. I eat Popeyes once, and I'm like, I'm done with it for about a month. If I eat it twice, I just feel like I'm gonna turn into somebody who's from Tennessee. Anyway, protector of our First Amendment right to talk about poop socks is our attorney from Albuquerque, Sage Samarage Morris Green.
Poop socks are so gross.
That's why I got to put her on, just for the show.
Oh, Jesus. But I guess it is within your First Amendment rights to talk about it. Also, I am really from Santa Fe. I just drive to Albuquerque every day.
What rhymes with Santa Fe?
Get the hell away from me.
There we go. Watch the Hawk. And from the home of country music, Elvis, and Power Ranger Memorial Square is Eric Blue Thwim.
Power Rangers, yay.
Our Android, yes. So two corrections from last week's show. First, I said that Pixel didn't have much of a hand in Cave Story 3D. Actually, not correct. My contacts at NISA might be on. Okay, who's in the wind tunnel here, guys?
Not I.
Somebody's blowing.
I don't think it's me.
So anyway, NIS America might be on next week's show to talk about the game. He told me Pixel was active in the game's development, but that doesn't change the fact that I would love to see Cave Story 2, damn it. So make it happen, Pixel. Secondly, I
see Cave Story Vita and Cave Story PS4 and Cave Story 360. And
yeah, and if wishes were horses, Sean would have gotten a new Monster Hunter game by now.
Yeah, too bad. Too bad wishes aren't horses. I also told Blue that Uncharted 3, the Fortune Hunters Pack, was their Project $10 scheme. It's actually Project $30 after you buy the $60 game, but I don't want to open that can of worms again because people didn't like our epic talk about DLC. One last thing. I have a Jeer of the Week goes to SOCOM 4, which I try to play with a friend of the show, Jeremy Lamont. But I keep getting stuck at 97% on the first of four, updates multiple times. I even cleared out the cache, cleared out the previous patches on the hard drive, started over. I could not play the game. Every time I put it in, it loads up. I see the picture of the guy, and I cannot play the game. So Zipper Interactive, fix your shit. I'm getting kind of pissed that I can't play SOCOM 4. I am almost certain it uses... As we mentioned,
I bet you're about as pissed as NBA 2K11 fans.
Are you referring to the DLC or the servers?
I'm referring to the fact that the NBA 2K11 servers are going to go offline later this month. Oh, sorry.
No, sorry, that was me. I stepped on the cable on my headset, and my headset blew off my head.
So, Zipper Interactive and Sean Nola, fix your shit this week.
But also coming to you from a Rock Band microphone, that's what I'm using this week. So power.
I've converted her to the dark side.
Can we hear a few bars of Rock Me Like a Hurricane?
Ben-a-net.
Okay. There's a few bars. Anyway, enough of the pleasantries. I want to hear about games. Specifically, I want to hear about El Shaddai, damn it. Is there anyone who can offer impressions of the game? Say
we can do that.
3 months after launch?
Yeah, so this is the weird thing. We got a copy of El Shaddai in the mail from Ignition asking us to review it some 3 months late. So that's what I'm doing. And that game is okay. I think everybody already kind of knows that it's a really beautiful game. They do some really interesting things with filters and whatnot, and the subject matter is really interesting because, you don't get a lot of games that deal with the sort of Judeo-Christian mythos. It's based on the Book of Enoch or the Dead Sea Scrolls, which is, as far as I know, pretty uncharted territory for a major
you said
for a major console game.
That's a true story, though, right? The Dead Sea Scrolls.
That angel came down from heaven to pick all the other angels that were fallen back up to heaven?
That's a true story, right?
Sure.
I thought it was a Devil May Cry kind of side story.
Well, here's the thing about it that kind of struck me as weird. The way the maps are set up and the sort of button mashy gameplay that it provides, if you strip away the art style and the story, it feels kind of like a PS1 game. Ooh. And I say that in a lot of ways because there are a couple of little things that, like the save pointing system, that really feel antiquated, and in a way it kind of ruins the good part of the experience, which is this, you know, crazy world and art style that you go through. You know, every time you have to stop the music, which is really good, but to save your game, it puts these little weird punctuations in it that don't need to be there.
Punctuations.
Well, I mean, you walk up to so Lucifel, the guy's helping you out. He serves as the save point. So you'll find him talking on a cell phone, and when you see him, you go up and you
wait. Talking on a cell phone? I thought this was set in olden times.
It's set in all times.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
All times, like, at once.
Like a hybrid of like future, past, present?
Not really. It's all this weird ethereal, crazy. You're on floating planes, and there's shit going on in the background. Very high concept kind of stuff. It's not really set in any time or place.
Okay.
But you'll go up to him and he's on his cell phone and he'll call God for you to save. But when you do that, you know, you've got this really atmospheric game with this great music and this great scenery. And you go up to him and you press start and it stops the music and it brings up a menu and then it brings up the, you know, saving data menu. And then it starts the music over again. And it's just so weird that you have to punctuate it like that.
Okay. That was my one complaint about Dead Space for the PS3, the original one. It was like they created this really immersive environment, and all of a sudden, then the PS3 like save interface would come up.
This one, I'm trying to think off the top of my head if the actual PS3 save interface actually comes up, which I actually don't think it does.
Okay.
But it's just their interface is so clunky and old school that it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I'm saying a lot of these negative things about it, and kind of the way I'm approaching it, is that it's still an important game. I think it's going to be one of those games people talk about, when you bring up art in games, just because of a, like I said, the subject matter you don't really see explored very much. And they did really focus on the character and world design instead of just focusing on gameplay, which is take it or leave it. They focused on something.
No.
But I don't know. It's okay.
And like three months after it came out and it's still going for like $50, is that like a good price for it, or no, where do you think it should be?
50 is not, 30, maybe 20. I don't see this game staying above 20 for.
At launch, you could have picked it up for 40. I saw that.
Yeah, so
some places. I believe Fry's
out. It's short too. Actually, at the beginning of the game, they so basically the tutorial level is you going up to the Tower of Babel, and then the game actually takes you up the Tower of Babel, and when you get up there, Lucifer goes, "You could probably get up there in 7 hours."
wait, Sean. Babel, not Babel?
Whichever. Okay. they never actually call it the Tower of Babel or Tower of Babel. They just call it the Tower, but that's what it is.
Okay. I haven't
probably
heard that pronunciation.
They weren't sure of the pronunciation either.
I thought I'd been saying it wrong this whole time. That's why.
I've heard it both ways.
Okay.
Did you, segue real quick, did you, Deagle, think that was weird in Batman? How they were called? I always thought his name was Ra's al Ghul, and they were calling him Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of a modern update. When did that character come about? Like the 70s? And I think...
Yeah.
I feel like it's weird
that they would change it. Like, oh, it turns out we've been pronouncing his name wrong all this time. Like, why wouldn't you just stick with, this is his name?
Yeah, he's been Ra's al Ghul forever and ever and ever.
Okay, that's what I thought. But it wasn't like a one-time thing like someone fucked up. Like, every single character that refers to him calls him Ra's al Ghul.
I think he was called that.
That's the correct pronunciation.
He was called Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, what I think is funny is that he's called that in the animated series, and half of the animated series cast is in that game, and so they had to go and tell them, now you guys have been pronouncing it wrong for the past decade, two decades.
Yeah, see, that's weird.
Yeah.
I want to know what we're going to call the guy from What's Happening. Never mind. That joke went over well. Sean, you been playing anything else?
Never use that joke again.
No more what's happening jokes. Oh, God, never mind.
Well, I wanted to bring this up last week, but I keep talking about Marvel Superhero Squad Online, and they finally actually launched. Like, they are an actual launched product now instead of just a beta. Yeah. And so I've been playing a lot of that since they launched, and they added this sort of achievement system.
Mm-hmm.
Except the difference between their achievement system and a regular achievement system is you have to do them in order. So, like, the first one will be, you know, get at least one squad member up to level 5, and the next one will be, like, you know, play in a card game or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the fourth achievement, there's 20 of them, and each one you get a prize, and they're, like, special characters you can only unlock by doing that. But the fourth challenge is... basically buy something. Like, you have to add add a character to your roster, which the only way you can do that is by buying it, or you can technically earn them, but it takes
forever.
Yeah, like, I have not earned a character that way,
and you've been playing for a while.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so naturally I would think that people would start complaining, like, it's, you know, this is bullshit, you know, like, I just started playing. You're telling me that to get further in this challenge system, I have to spend money. But the complaint,
is it super bullshit?
Well, I would say it's super bullshit. But the complaint people actually had was that it's not fair that if you've already bought everything there is to buy,
oh, yes,
that you have no way of completing that challenge.
Yeah.
And that was a big complaint. And I'm sitting there trying to tally how much money these people have spent on this game, mm-hmm. and it's like. $170.
Wow. Now, tell me about the prices and what is available for the game, because I don't really know much about it.
So basically, you can there's silver and gold, right? So mm-hmm. you earn silver, you pay for gold, or you can have a monthly subscription, which if you have a monthly subscription, you get 500 gold pieces every month, and then you can actually, there are ways to earn gold in game if you have a monthly subscription.
Mm-hmm.
The characters cost, it's about a penny per piece of gold. Okay. Characters cost between $6 and $10, mm-hmm. depending on which character it is, and then they'll have, like, sales and stuff, so you can get them cheaper than that.
Right.
But, you know, that's what you can pay for characters, and then there's also card packs. There's two different types of card packs. There's a silver pack and a gold pack, mm-hmm. and it's not like one has better cards than the other, it's just one has different cards than the other, so if you want to collect all the cards... you have to buy the gold ones too.
Hmm.
But the only way to earn gold in game is there's a wheel that every day you'll get like one piece on the wheel that you can earn gold.
Right.
It's like playing Wheel of Fortune, basically. Right.
Is there bankrupt?
There's not bankrupt. Well, thank God. There's fruit. You can earn fruit on the wheel, and they haven't implemented any way to use the fruit. So after you've been playing for a while, you have all this fruit, and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing with all these fruit items. Where was I going? Oh, so basically, yeah. So they were basically saying that to get past this achievement, to earn other characters and items and stuff, you have to pay at least $5. I expected the big complaint to be that's bullshit, you're making me pay $5 to play this free game, but it really was, hey, I've already bought everything there is to buy, and now I can't move forward in the challenge mode.
Now the challenge mode is an optional mode, or is that
Yeah, it's like I said, it's just like if you can imagine you have an achievement system mm-hmm. where every level you earn something, and then it's basically every fifth level you earn a special character. That's the only way you can earn it. So like if you wanted to get Wolverine in his street clothes, or Sentry, or FF Spider-Man, or you know, like characters like that. Mm-hmm. That's the only way.
That FF.
But that's the only way you can earn them. So that was, I don't know, I just thought it was a weird juxtaposition. People should check it out, especially if you've got kids. Like I said, that card game in there is top notch. I really like the card game.
How did you feel about the card game in Fallout New Vegas?
I do not remember there being a card game in Fallout New Vegas, so obviously I did not think much of it.
Yeah. You can play Caravan. It's that one where you have three stacks and you try and get 2 out of 3 of them in between, like, 16 and 21, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You don't remember it. Anyway, I thought that was a pretty good card game.
I thought it was pretty fun.
I thought it was good.
Yeah, well, this is more like a Magic the Gathering kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah. I also, this week, I played the Elementals Monsters game on PS3.
Was that the PSP Mini one?
No.
That's the Hudson, right?
No. Oh, yeah, it is Hudson. Okay. No, it was a card game, but I use the term card very loosely because your deck consists of 3 cards.
And they're really slutty.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, why bother making it a card game instead of like...
Wait, that's not the tower defense game?
No, it's...
What the hell am I thinking of?
I don't know, but I do think it's made by Hudson, though.
Okay.
But it came out a couple weeks ago, and it was free if you had PlayStation Plus, and I think it was like $10 if you didn't. And yeah, it was like, oh, cool, a card game. And I'm like, why bother making them cards if it's just 3 per deck, other than you don't have to animate?
Right. I remember Hudson had a very similar tower defense, and you had monsters, you know, you had like maybe an ice, I don't know, tower, and that would take on, you know, fire monsters and stuff like that. And it was card-based, but it had a very limited amount, maybe 5 different cards or 6 different cards in there. And it just seemed, I don't know, it seemed like it was missing something.
Well, that's how this is, too. There are a fair number of – there's a fair variety of cards in it, but it's basically just there are, I want to say, 4 elements, and so it's sort of like playing rock, paper, scissors. Mm-hmm. And so if they pull out a – and you can see each other's cards, but it's just one is active at a time. So if they activate their fire one, you want to activate your water one, and then you lose a turn by activating that. And so then they're going to take their fire one away and activate their electricity one or whatever, and it's just – a stupid kind of tap dance of I'm gonna do all these things.
Did you ever play Eye of Judgment?
I did play Eye of Judgment. I have that somewhere.
We should play that.
We should.
Of course, it has to be the right time of day for it to recognize.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I think I played it a few times, and there was that 60-second timeout, and I couldn't get it to recognize this one like car that would have trumped everything. Oh, it drove me nuts! I almost kicked my PSI through the window.
The thing I didn't like about Eye of Judgment is it was so hard to find the cards for it. When you did, they were always super expensive.
Dude, I went into Game Workshop asking about it, and they just looked at me like I had the plague.
At Games Workshop?
Yeah, because I figured...
Game Workshop only sells first-party Games Workshop stuff.
They sell what?
They only sell first-party Games Workshop stuff.
At one time, they had advertised that they were going to carry the Eye of Judgment.
Wait, no, that's a different Eye of Judgment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Eye of Judgment was a Warhammer Fantasy expansion pack also.
All right. Never mind. Well, I went in there and they still didn't get the time of day for that. I had to explain what it was. They were like, why would you want to play that?
Pretty much. Yeah, they're pretty snobby in Workshop stores about other people's products.
Yeah. Go back to painting your figures, guys. Sorry to bother you. Speaking of let's hear from Dave.
That's what they do, yeah.
No, yeah. Same rage. You there?
What do you want? Yeah.
What do you want? I'm sorry to intrude. Are you painting your figure right now?
I'm styling my mohawk.
Oh, yeah. Can you tell us about...
Speaking her hair.
Yes, can you tell us about what you've been playing this week?
No, I can't.
Okay, we'll move to blue.
I have played Solo to Robo, and that's about it, because it's a really big research week, and I've had to do a lot of extra research for this fucking bullshit, stupid-ass assignment that is ridiculous and ridiculous and
Sage,
ridiculous.
Sage. Yeah.
Hi. anyway, all I've really played is Solo to Robo, which I'm happy to say is getting slightly more challenging, which is good, because I had played a lot of it and sort of put it down for a while and actually gone back to Kirby, not because I didn't like it, but just because it was too... Like, the challenge level wasn't increasing at all.
Right.
And it's, I still think it's not hard enough, but it is getting a little better. The only real complaint I have with it at this point is that you can't skip dialogue at all. Mm-hmm. If you hold down the A button, you can make it move a little faster, but I read a lot faster than it goes. And if you, like, have had to go back and redo a part that you had to redo, you know, for whatever reason, that you've already done, then you can't, like, skip any of that dialogue, and it's really... It's really annoying. I mean, Sean, I don't think you'd have a problem with the paper dolls, because at least they're sort of interactive, and that's entertaining. but the fact that you have to, like, sit there and listen to every goddamn thing they say, even if it's really boring, is, like, that loses my interest a little bit.
Mm. Yes. You had me at paper dolls, though. Blue, what about you?
You know, it's been a relatively light week.
Did you download any DLC lately?
No.
Oh, wait. On that note, though, really quick, I do want to say that right after the show last week, I turned on PSN and noticed they had that deal where if you spent $60, you got $10 back. So then I spent like $60.
What'd you buy?
I bought just a bunch of stuff that I had been thinking about, but wanted to get it if there was a sale. So I bought Third Birthday and a couple other things.
I was hoping you'd buy Worms Crazy Golf.
Worms! I love
I
Worms.
Okay.
I wanted to ask... Oh, go ahead, Sean, sorry.
I was going to ask if it's worth picking up for multiplayer.
It looks like Worms, just with a golf ball. All I saw so far was just a kind of a single player, where the score was accumulating by bouncing off bats and different things. And it looks like they have a free, level skin, carnival themed skin this week. So, that with the PSN price drop, for $8, I was about to pick it up. Cause yeah. I like me some Worms.
I do too.
They're fun.
I wanted to ask you guys, have you played... Because over the weekend on Halloween, Steam had their everything is super cheap because it's Halloween sale,
mm-hmm.
which if you missed, that's sad for you. And one of the games they had, the name of which is escaping me right now, but basically you're at a carnival and you're shooting all kinds of like zombie clones of carnies gone wrong. So there's like weird bearded ladies walking around and all kinds of shit. So it looks like a weird mix of the Carnival game and like that game series and the Left 4 Dead games.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, no. you guys, do you know what I'm talking about?
No idea.
No.
Okay. Well, I will figure out the name and I will play it because I bought it. So I will play it and I will let you guys know.
Did you buy a Voxatron?
A Voxatron?
Voxatron, the humble game of the week.
I didn't realize that had come out.
Yeah, that did. It looks just like, what was it, 3D Game Heroes. Very, very, kind of pixelated. It's a real simple game. I bought it. You can move in, four directions, almost like a twin stick shooter. You can't use a controller as of yet. I think it's still, they're still working on the game. But a fun little game, and it has its own kind of level graphic designer, so that is definitely a plus. And, it's pay what you want to give to the different organizations. You can decide to contribute to the developer charity, things like that, which I'm always the sucker for. And plus, I love the look of the game. It's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's dual twin stick shooting, and we all know how much you like handling dual sticks.
That's right.
If it's dual stick shooter, you said didn't support the controller?
No, it did not. Right? You got to use a keyboard, so you're probably
out. Doesn't support Deagle's hands.
Actually, it does. It does. I just wish you could shoot. You could shoot and walk in two different directions.
And I'm sure every other guy wishes that too.
the world is overpopulated as it is. We don't need that. So anyway, I thought I'd maybe I'll jump in right here and talk about what I've been playing. One thing I wanted to start off with was talk a little bit about Lord of the Rings, The War in the North, which looked absolutely awesome. We saw gameplay kind of sync to this symphonic orchestra at E3. And if you recall, that's when we were waiting in the lobby with Tim Schafer and watching him being denied access to the area by the Warner Brothers goons. So now that I had really high hopes for this one, not necessarily because I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, but which I am, but because I was a real fan of Snowblind's previous games, everything from Baldur's Gate, Dark Alliance, Champions of Norrath, and Champions Return to Arms, which I thought offered some of the best Diablo-style action seen on console until perhaps Torchlight was released fairly recently.
I could agree with that.
Yeah, in order to make a good Diablo killer, you need a couple things. A really good loot formula which drops enough kind of distinct trinkets to keep you going, and combat that's just easy to pick up but not too tedious across, you know, a 8-10 hour journey. So War in the North, it doesn't really feel like a Snowblind game. It may use an advanced version of the engine, but it doesn't feel like that. There's an ample supply of loot, which is kind of dropped by the orcs. It's available in towns or in these kind of invisible convenience stores which are on the battlefield. And so right now, I expected someone to chime in. You guys missed your cue and say, what? That's not very Middle Earth. And I would say...
What? That's not very Middle Earth.
Thank you, Sean, for the assist.
Yeah, what you talking about?
So I would say that's kind of the overall feel of the game. It's good, but Snowblind seemed kind of limited by the license in that they had to... I mean, they got rid of course, the random dungeons and things like that, but they had to adapt their gameplay style for, you know, Lord of the Rings. So you have three characters. You got this ranger, you got this kick-ass dwarf, and you got this lady magician there. Unlike many games in the genre, even Snowblind's own Justice League, which I probably need to pick up for PSP one of these days. It was kind of cool. Yeah. You don't switch characters until you reach major checkpoints. They're usually kind of at the end of the stage. But luckily, the AI is clever enough to not get itself killed. And if you are dumb enough to get yourself killed, they do come to your rescue. They kill minor enemies. They don't, as far as boss characters, they don't seem to help too much there.
They never get themselves killed?
No, they got themselves injured, and then you go over and you press A to heal. I think the lady she got. But if you play well enough and you kind of look out for them, like I mounted that sounds disgusting. I'm on a belief. And I was, you know, there's certain sequences where you keep the enemies at bay, and so they'll only have to fight one or two, orcs or trolls at a time, and, you know, then they can handle that. So anyway, a lot of fighting, so it's more of a brawler. It's got the light heavy attacks, it's even has finishing moves, and the problem, at least I was playing with the ranger, is that, you know, you have that HP number which flies off every time you hit an enemy. And that number, that whatever the HP or damage coefficient thing, would increase as I moved up levels. And my weapons, you know, you could pick up weapons, and they do look a little bit different. They're rendered, so if you have like a hood or a cloak, you know, that changes. And you can get additional moves from, you know, tech trees. There's three different tech trees. But still combat, it never really felt like it evolved or changed. Instead, I was doing more damage against stronger foes, but, you know, that cancel each other out. And so combat felt a little bit stagnant for me. But it's still, you know, when you're around a group of enemies and they surround you and, you know, you're trying to stay in the magician's sanctuary spell zone, it can get heated and it can get fun. I guess the other problem is that conflicts feel pretty scripted. When I was on the ballista and foes were popping up, they would keep popping up in the same areas and they would run in the same patterns. And I know, you know, you guys are going to say, here's Sean again, they're dumb orcs. They're supposed to run in patterns. Sean? He's talking sense.
Hold on. Sorry, they're dumb orcs and they're supposed to run in the same pattern.
Yeah. So anyway, I'd like just to see a little AI, you know, if one's killed in front of them. But other than
orcs are dumb.
Yeah. Other than combat, I mean, the game is solid. It's got a nice orchestral soundtrack. The locations look like they do from the films. I think there's some new locations, or maybe they're from the director's cut of the films. And it will probably please a Lord of the Rings fan. Unfortunately, I think it's coming out the wrong time unless people choose to buy it, you know, unless they pick it up with the buy two, get one free deals of the season. So that's Lord of the Rings. Fun. I like it. I don't know. I wish there was a little bit more to it. Combat isn't its forte. The other thing I've been playing. Yeah, Sean, you have a question?
That's not very Middle Earth.
Are you making fun?
That's the dumb orc thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what my lines are.
If Tolkien didn't bring orcs, we may not have Warhammer.
I know that.
So we all have him.
That's true.
That is true. So the other thing I was playing was GoldenEye Reloaded 007, and which was kind of mean because I got it, and they just announced the next Bond film, which is going to be Skyfall, not Skyrim, because I've been playing that, but I can't talk about that. I'm under embargo, but Skyfall. So I'm looking.
Have you really been playing it?
Yes.
See, I haven't talked to you in a while. I hate you.
It's the hate show. So anyway, you guys remember at E3 when GoldenEye, they were showing it for the Wii at Nintendo's press conference. I applauded.
Yep.
And Sean threw the elbow ribs.
Yep.
And the guy next to us chucked his camera down into the aisle.
Was that over GoldenEye or was that over something?
I don't remember.
It doesn't have Pierce Brosnan in it, damn it!
Slam. Yeah.
There's Roger Moore. So anyway, that turned out to be pretty good. I think it was an interesting rendition of the old game. It offered, you know, some interesting things, did some changes to the environments. And this one, it kind of up-reses that and it adds a few things. And it corrects a number of the problems. The first thing was the single-player game, which is weird because, right about now, it really can't compare to Activision's own Call of Duty 3, you know. But at least it delivers a frame rate and responsiveness that, for me, it delivered and improved upon, you know, Battlefield 3's single-player campaign. For those that didn't play the, I'll call it a remake of GoldenEye, the single-player game feels the same. What it does, as I mentioned,
Wait, go back. Remake?
Yeah. I say that. I want to write that in almost every review that takes a old game and ports it to the Wii.
But, oh, I got it. I hope all of you out there in Punland understood how funny that was.
So what do you call it when they port it to now-gen systems? That's what I'm trying to...
PS3 make.
Oh, Sean. Wow, you're amazing. Okay. So anyway, they take levels. Like, the first level starts off with that guard tower from the Nintendo 64 version, and then they remix it. You know, there's you can go down. There's, like, a pipe and, you know, that tunnel that you would go through at the end of the level. Well, then it starts off, you know, you take a truck ride, and then you go into the bowels of this, you know, system. I said bowels right there. And they mixed it enough, or they changed it enough to avoid, you know, a lawsuit from Rare, Microsoft there. And like the old games, you can go in, and especially like the Wii version, you can either go stealth or guns blazing. But the enemies usually take notice. They're a little bit realistic. So I haven't been as stealthy as Bond probably should be. The one change is a Spec Ops mode, which gives you certain objectives, you know, stealth-based or different things like that, where you have these user customizable variables so you can, you know, tweak health and ammo, things like that. I've only played
about two. Does it feel unique in those, like, stealth versus combat aspects, or does it feel like it took a little from either Metal Gear or Splinter Cell or those kind of games?
It doesn't feel as good as a stealth, as a dedicated stealth game, if that makes sense.
But that does make sense. But what I'm asking also is, does it feel unique enough itself to the Bond, you know, GoldenEye series? Does it feel like they sort of pulled elements from other places, slapped a James Bond coat of paint on it, and then called it good?
I'd say neither of those. The stealth isn't as refined. It just doesn't feel fun to be stealthy as it would in Splinter Cell or Metal Gear. And so it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the game itself is still fun to play, you know, guns blazing, commando style.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I haven't been playing stealthy.
Could you sneak up behind soldiers and shoot their hats off like in the original GoldenEye?
I didn't try. At the gun range, I noticed one small thing where they had, you know, targets. And the first time, you know, I went for the headshot of the target, you know, it's kind of body shaped. And that came off. And then the middle came off and the bottom. I thought that was really cool. And then I said, wait, I wonder if the game's faking me. So I aimed at the bottom first and thinking the whole thing would crumble. And even though I'm hitting the bottom, the top came off, and it was a pre-canned kind of animation.
Lame.
Yeah, so that was kind of weak. But that's not really a measure of the whole game. The two multiplayer games so far were good. I've seen one of the – I think they have four new maps. And even though I had a good time playing GoldenEye Online, I can't help but feel there's probably better online arenas out there or soon to be out there. Which kind of brings me to GoldenEye's Achilles. Launching the game right now just seems like suicide for it. You know, it's a $60 game, and I think that they could have dropped it to $50 or even $40 because it is, you know, very nice looking, but it's still a port. You know, it's probably worth $60 to a hardcore 007 fan, but there's so much good stuff out right now, it's hard to recommend over...
I'm really surprised it wasn't a downloadable.
Yeah.
I think it's too big for that. For you know,
I downloaded Dead Space, $20.
Yeah, I guess so.
And the Death Smiles sequel was download only, if I recall correctly.
How big was that? That was a shmup, though. It was like a 2D.
Yeah, that was a shmup. I'm saying we're saying size wise, but I bet it's.
But
not
it was a full retail
as...
game. I mean, it was intended to be a full retail game, but they just went the downloadable route.
No, I'm just saying that because it's kind of a 2D, you can, you know, it usually takes less dick space.
Dick space?
Yeah.
Looks like you got this episode title.
Less dick space. So where was I? They could have offered that. I don't know. But it seemed like Activision, they wanted to go the full $60. On this one, and so for full $60, I don't think there's been a game that has been downloadable out the door $60. Is there?
Well, maybe not. SOCOM was it would be the only one I could think of.
That was $60.
Yeah, well, Fireteam Bravo. Not Fireteam Bravo.
That was the PSP game.
Confrontation. Right. Came out day and date on PSP or PSN rather.
Is in, yeah, and we all know how that went.
But I'm just saying, there is precedent there.
Okay. I don't know. You think with Activision, they're probably pushing for the $60 full product. So I expect if you're interested, if you're a 007 fanatic like me, wait for price drop on that one. So last thing I was going to talk about was Kirby's Return to Dreamland, which, like I told Nola, it felt like one of those platformers no one makes anymore. And Sean corrected me and said, well, WayForward makes them, so I stand corrected. Kirby's just really fun. You know, it's a lot of people are dismissing it because it's pretty easy. But that's not the point. If you're playing it for difficulty or for a traditional challenge, you know, you're probably playing the wrong game. Yeah, it's, you know, at least it has six main worlds. And the first, I don't know, four pretty easy. It ramps up, and the final boss is, you know, significantly difficult. It's kind of a multi-stage encounter. And then it opens up a new game option. But it's just so much fun. You know, it's much like the old Kirby games. So there's a wind blowing, so I'll stop. I'll shut up now. I'll shut up.
I wish it had been named that.
L, shut your mouth. So Blue, tell me what's you've been up to.
Well, basically, I mean, I've played a lot, but I haven't played a lot, if that makes sense. It's, you know, I've played a couple of different games, but I really didn't sink a ton of time into it. It's just I've played some more Forza Motorsport 4.
Right.
And of course, that's probably going to be my addiction for the next month or two, cuz I'm absolutely hooked on the tag mode.
Did you end up buying the pass?
Not yet. I haven't plunked down the money for it yet, but I am thinking about it. I mean, it's
everybody's thinking about it. I saw GPD he was thinking about it, and he was asking, you know, people, and I was thinking about it. You were thinking about it. I don't think anyone's actually committed.
I think that a lot of that is because the game has 500 cars in it, and right. It's taken a pretty decent time, you know, for me to unlock a decent or, you know, buy a decent amount of cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the overall the limit on the garage size is like 550, which only leaves about 50 more cars or so after you have all the cars in the game.
Now, one of the things is that you're going to have to purchase the cars with in-game currency. Does that bother you?
Yeah,
I mean, you're paying money.
I can
You're paying.
I mean,
money.
I can understand.
So they're not just not adding them to your garage. You're gonna have to earn them.
Your crotch.
Your what?
What did you just say?
Garage.
Oh, garage. It sounded like you said to your crotch.
You could do that. You can add them too.
Chris. You know, I mean, it's going back to the content. I mean, it's. I mean, honestly, I mean, I wouldn't mind getting it if they put, you know, the right cars in there and whatnot. But I mean, honestly, I don't see the need for it yet. I think the game needs more tracks than it does more cars.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
Because it's, I mean, it's when you're playing online, unless you make your own room where you can customize, oh, we're going to play this stage under these rules, yada, yada, yada. If you're just going by the default servers in the game, it just rotates the specific set of levels, like if you're playing the tag mode or mm-hmm. whatnot. I think there are a couple of modes where it just completely randomizes everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like for the tag mode, it's like you'll see one stage show up. Then you'll know that after this stage, the Top Gear stage comes up, and then you know, it's basically the Top Gear levels.
Yeah, like the bowling.
I sort of like it because you know, for tag mode, it can be fun because you know you have a open stretch of land, but you know at the same time, there's not a lot to slow cars down and kind of it. It just feels like you're running around on a flat plane, which of course you are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, I found that stages like the Autumn Ring, I think is it the Autumn Ring?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's one of the stages that I believe is one of the Microsoft created levels.
Mm-hmm.
Not one based on.
Turn. What are they? Turn 10.
Turn 10, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, there's one stage, I think it's Autumn Ring, because, I mean, it's got, you know, the trees in the autumn, mm-hmm. you know, changing colors and stuff like that. It's a beautiful stage.
Right.
And, like, for the tag mode, Pass the It, I believe it is, or Keep the It, that's one stage that will sometimes come up when you're playing it at random. And it's just the short course. It's not much more... complicated than just a simple oval. Mm-hmm. And that stage, it's small, but for some reason it works really well. I think a lot of the more simple stages, the ones that don't have as many turns in it, you know, like Indianapolis, you know, the Indianapolis oval, I mean, that's a great stage because you can get up at a really fast speed and have somebody come the other way, go full head on, shoot your car 50 feet in the air. And that did happen to me in one game of tag, and I was just laughing my ass off at it. I mean, I've had a lot of fun with it. I mean, it's, you know, I've never had Xbox Live Gold before.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that I've, you know, sat down with the tag mode, and I'm already feeling like I got my money's worth, both for Forza Motorsport 4 itself and for the live account.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'd love to play with some tech gamers out there. I started a car club called Dracula Racing, which, yes, is a tribute to Rob Zombie.
Mm. We'll have to get him in.
Shouldn't it be Dracula Racing?
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Okay, they just said Dracula.
It's not the Dracula. I'm going to suck out your blood. But yeah, I mean, I'm addicted to Forza Motorsport 4. It's like it seems like a lot of the games I've gotten addicted to over this generation have been Microsoft racing games. I mean, I played Project Gotham Racing 3 for, off and on for about 2 or 3 years. I loved that game, and I think this. I mean,
Microsoft, was it?
Project Gotham Racing?
That was Bizarre Creations.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying because it was first party. Or
oh okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there are some things that Project Gotham Racing did better. I mean, they had weather effects, and I'm not sure if Project Gotham Racing had, yeah, it did have night racing.
It did.
Yep. In, Project Gotham Racing, I believe so.
And then it had, I like the different radio stations. That was one of the first games to do that, I think, before, like, Grand Theft Auto. I remember the older versions.
Grand Theft Auto had it.
First?
Oh, yeah, and Grand Theft Auto 1.
Did it?
Oh yeah.
The overhead.
Because the way it worked is what radio station you listen to depended on what car you got into.
Okay.
You're right.
But I liked how PGR had the garage that you could actually walk around and see all your cars parked around.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing I really loved about it. And with the garage interface in Forza Motorsport 4, you don't have that. It's just a menu, and it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can get that. I mean, it gets the job done, but it's not the same. It's just not the same kind of experience that I was hoping would carry over from Project Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And you can select the cars and view them, walk around them in the default hangar or garage or whatever. But I liked how you could just set out, this car is in that spot and this car is in that spot, and just walk around like this closed off garage and just sit there and just drool over the cars. I love that about PGR. And I especially miss it now because I'm driving a Hulkamania Dodge Ram SRT10.
Do you want to be a Hulkamaniac?
Yeah, brother.
Do you remember that song? I want to be a Hulkamaniac. Have fun with my family and friends.
Sean, I love you.
But yeah, it's like I don't think it can be understated that community that is creating all of the designs, the skins and templates for the cars, it is absolutely amazing. It's like this truck isn't just a normal Hulkamania truck. It's not like just a truck with Hulkamania written on the side of it. It's got Hulkamania written just like the lettering that's on the Hulk Hogan t-shirt. And then it has two arms on each, an arm on each side of the truck, ripping the shirt, which is on the hood of the truck. And it's got a championship belt on it and black, white and yellow, or black, yellow and red drawing of Hogan on the truck bed cover.
Hmm. If it ever came to PS3, Hip Hop Gamer would probably be playing it then.
But this belt doesn't spin, though. I think the one he carries around is the spinner.
I think so. If it's not broken. Because I think it's the plastic model, right?
Yeah, I won one of those at a indie event, an indie wrestling event. And I actually have it displayed on top of my stereo.
No.
Guest. But, Forza Motorsport 4 is an absolutely awesome game. I don't think it's the best racing game of all time, but it's easily one of my top three.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And two other games I've been playing, a little bit. I've found Monster Hunter Tri for the Wii over at Best Buy. They had it on sale, or it was either a sale or a clearance, for $9.50.
With the controller?
That's a clearance.
No, it wasn't with the controller, but I actually I bought the classic controller when Walmart had like some sort of a sale where the bundle with the points card was like 10 or 12 bucks, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I rebought the classic controller Pro so I could use it with Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
Mm-hmm.
So I still had the controller anyways. And but it was the standalone game for $9.50, and I had a Best Buy credit, which knocked it down to like $4.50 plus tax. I mean, it was that the must buy point for me. I'm a couple hours in. I've done maybe two or three quests, something mm-hmm. like that, and I can sort of feel the hooks digging in a bit, which might be bad news for Persona 3 Portable. And yeah, I mean, I need to spend some more time with it, but it's at $9.50. I don't think my money's going to go to waste. It seems like something that is just, it's complicated,
mm-hmm.
you know,
have to find, you know, torches, or you're going to have to use torches and find this and that and yada. There's a lot to it, but I feel that it's that in some strange way, it's simple enough to kind of keep me going. It's just something I can kind of just go on autopilot and do. I got to kill these dinos.
Well, we'll talk about it next week once you've fought some of the bigger monsters. Like, the real hook of it is when you get into those, the bigger monsters, and the combat becomes really strategic.
Well, you know, I did play the demo for Monster Hunter Tri. I got that when GameStop was giving them away or something like that. And I mean, those are, I know what you're talking about though. It's like, you know, you'll be pounding the crap out of this thing, and then sometimes it'll like fly over to another stage, and it's like the entire battle can like be spread out around the entire game world or something like that.
It's like gator wrestling.
But yeah.
Right, Sean?
There are gators in the one we didn't get. Just keep rubbing it in.
Oh my god, I just had a brilliant idea for a game.
Gator wrestling?
Yeah, but on the Kinect, if the Kinect was not a piece of shit, but since it is, maybe on something else like the Wii.
I could go for some gator wrestling.
Right? Wrestle some gators. It's simple. It's easy. It's pure.
I like the idea of like gator wrestling on the Kinect where you use one of those inflatable pool gators.
Oh, that would be perfect. That would be a perfect peripheral game.
I know,
In fact, the game comes with a blow-up gator just in case you don't have one already. Yeah.
And it recognizes all the important parts of the gator, so it's like it tells you have to put the gator in some sort of headlock. So then you have to do it before the timer runs out.
That would be brilliant. And your character's
name is
like
DLC crocodiles.
What?
Yeah.
They could have DLC crocodiles.
Yeah, exactly.
Different. Gator wrestling. That should be like a DLC expansion to that Hulk Hogan Kinect game. You know, Hulk Hogan.
So if anyone out there listening to this ends up making this game, you heard it here first, and you should give us some credit. That's all I'm saying.
Put us in
special thanks in the credit in the credits, and maybe a check. That wouldn't hurt.
Or some free game. Yeah, check would not hurt.
Okay.
That's about all I've been playing, and I have been messing around with Fire Pro Wrestling Returns a bit, but of course I've been doing that since 2007. I am addicted to that thing. It's almost an unhealthy addiction, because Fire Pro Wrestling Returns has, you know, a whole ton, I mean, it has like 300 wrestlers in it, but it doesn't have
Did we talk about this one before?
Yeah, we have.
Oh, I'm sure we have with me on the show. Yeah, I'm sure it's come up at
least.
Deja
vu. Okay, sorry.
But yeah, it's like with the addictive part is that I've been playing. You know, I've had Returns on my PS2 on my TV, and then I've had Fire Pro Wrestling D for the Dreamcast playing on the portable PlayStation 1 screen that I have, and I've been copying the color data and the outfit data or whatever for the wrestlers that are not in Fire Pro Wrestling Returns from D and putting them in to Fire Pro Wrestling Returns. And it's unhealthy. It's unhealthy for me. I'm going to use years of my life on this thing.
It's like a paint by numbers. Paint by numbers at the Sistine Chapel.
That's got to be the best $15 game, or I guess it was ended up being $5 game after Amazon price dropped it or something like that. But yeah, it's Desert Island game.
Speaking of cheap games, why don't we hear from our friends at Nexon? We got Christina and Davey talking about Dragon Nest. Hey guys, Desert Eagle here, and today I'm being joined by Christina and Davey, who serve as associate producers at Nexon America. Listeners will remember one of our the E3 titles that particularly impressed the team here this year was Dragon Nest. It's a free-to-play title which rivaled the visual fidelity and playability of a off-the-shelf game. So welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thank
Hi.
You.
Thank you for... Hello. Calling us.
Yeah, thank you. So if you don't mind, before we talk directly about Dragon Nest, I'd like to discuss the business model a little bit. Some of our readers and listeners are probably accustomed to the $60 console boxed copy model and maybe the downloadable title model. So one of the things is I want to talk about the gorilla in the room, which is kind of the downturned economy. Have you guys noted or seen any effect on the free-to-play model as of late?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll take that question. Well, I think we haven't really noticed an impact on the free-to-play model.
Mm-hmm.
Nexon has been pretty stable and, in fact, continually growing.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to say for the whole free-to-play model, but as far as our company, as Nexon, things have been going pretty great.
Okay. Awesome. Now, one of the things about Nexon's titles is that they originate in, many of them originate in Asian territories. And as our constituency of gamers will tell you, often there's changes that are made in the localization process. So beyond mere translations, what changes have been made to any of Nexon's titles?
So, yeah, the big thing, obviously, is the localization, the translation. So we mm-hmm. do the text, we do the voiceovers, which is pretty fun. We go to the studio and do those recordings.
Mm-hmm.
We change things like, we look at what would be attractive to our market. I mean, mm-hmm. as a publisher, we have some market experience, and we check out the games from the developers before we actually like sign a deal or a contract,
sure.
to see if they're gonna work in our region, and then from that point, usually the games are pretty pretty ready for our market. As far as Dragon Nest, we did we had added a couple modifications. For example, in other territories, there's a what is called a fatigue system that limits your gameplay on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
We felt that for our market here, for the U.S. market, our players wouldn't be very receptive to that limitation, so we removed that.
Okay.
So players can play as long as they want.
Right. Yeah. So none of the PC bong limitation there.
That's right.
Of playing for 3 days straight, right?
Yeah, okay. You can do it.
So you mentioned a little bit about Dragon's Nest. Let's get into that. Now, can you tell me a little bit about the gameplay of Dragon Nest for maybe people who haven't experienced or heard of the title?
I'll take this one. Dragon Nest is something we haven't tried in Nexon either, which is very action.
I can hear you.
Okay. Very action-filled, and a lot of the gameplay is very much like a console game,
mm-hmm.
where you actually have to direct your attacks and combos to the players on the field or enemies in the PvE sections. Dragon Nest is also compatible with a lot of the controllers,
mm-hmm.
because it's more of it's a different genre. It's more... We're appealing more to like FPS players, for example, where they can actually control with the controllers that they're very used to.
Yeah. Now, for console gamers who may not have much experience, could you offer a point of reference maybe in the console world, a comparable game?
You could kind of compare it to, let's say, like the God of War series.
Okay.
Control,
mm-hmm.
control-wise, it's pretty dynamic. It's fast-paced.
Mm-hmm.
You repeatedly hit monsters. You
sure.
perform combos and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun.
Right. A little less blood and sex, but still good.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't always need that. Now, one question I had is, how robust is it recommended for a player's PC to be to really enjoy the game, to get the most out of it?
Well, you don't need a really robust computer. One of our goals as a free-to-play publisher is to make sure that our products are available to a pretty wide audience, to as many players as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Dragon Nest, the minimum specs are a Pentium 4, 1 gig of RAM, and an NVIDIA 7600 around that series. I'm actually running the game at home on my laptop on a NVIDIA 7900 on Pentium 4. Mm-hmm. I do have 4 gigabytes of RAM, and I mean, one thing that I can recommend to players is to have more RAM. The more RAM, the better. So sure. We recommend around 2 gig and mm-hmm. NVIDIA 8000 and up.
And up. Okay, yeah. Cool. You know, this summer, Dragon Nest had offered the open beta, and I wondered what lessons did you guys kind of glean from testing? Were there any significant changes that were brought about?
So one of the changes we did that we brought in the open beta is, as mentioned earlier, is we implemented the empowerment system, which pretty much allows players to play as long as they want. And and while they have this empowerment, they have like a, it's almost like an experience bar. As long as they have empowerment, they gain extra experience as, you know, as they go through dungeons. Mm-hmm. So one thing we learned from that when we first implemented it is the players, they really didn't feel the benefits from the empowerment bar. To them, it was more of a, they can play forever, but that bar really doesn't mean anything to them. So what we've done is we've improved that empowerment system so that it's more meaningful. So now you like we changed the amount that you get on a daily basis, and you can actually see how much, like from the experience that you get in the dungeons and from the monsters, how much of that experience was from the empowerment. So mm-hmm. now it's more meaningful, and we've also increased the amount of extra experience that it gives.
Okay, very cool. Now, obviously, monetization allows firms to continue to build titles like Dragon Nest. Is there a particular strategy that Nexon employs or allows? Or by that, I mean, what advantages do microtransactions give to players?
Right. Well, microtransaction, the system itself makes it so that, you know, it's a free-to-play model, so everybody can enjoy the content, the full content for free. But the advantage of the actual microtransaction is we can offer some convenience items that, for example, you can reach certain goals quicker with those items. We also offer cosmetic items such as costumes, different hairstyles, different eye colors. And one thing that we're looking at possibly implementing in the future for Dragon Nest is, as an example, some type of passes that increases the amount of experience that you gain from, you know, either doing dungeons or something similar to that. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One thing is, those sounded pretty innocuous, and I was wondering if there was a type of content that maybe that wouldn't be allowed or permitted in one of your games, you know, either from a developer standpoint.
Actually, that's something that we try to avoid as a free-to-play mm-hmm. model, because we liked our game should be accessible and playable mm-hmm. all throughout without even paying. Mm-hmm. It's just that if you'd like to pay, you can customize your characters and then play more conveniently with messaging functions and, you know, different item mm-hmm.
I think. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, like, we try not to introduce any game breaking items,
sure.
like so that mm-hmm. players who don't spend any money, you know, so they don't get upset and feel like they can't compete anymore. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a fine balance that we're watching for, and you know, as we introduce different items into the economy, I mean, we watch closely, you know, how our players react. You know, we want to make sure it's fair for everybody, but still, while we got to support the game, and you know, mm-hmm. we got to somehow continue to provide updates, yeah. free updates to the players.
Very, very cool. That diligence sounds cool. Now, I've seen a few people online. They were what I assume to be selling gold online. And what are Nexon's policies about the trade of, say, real currency for virtual currency by players? Are there say moderators, or do you guys have a specific policy against that?
Yeah, we definitely don't support that type of activity.
Okay,
it's against our terms of use. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do have moderators, and mm-hmm. you know, it's the economy is kind of something we're trying to keep
sure.
we try to keep in check,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise, you know, we don't want to break the economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they, you know.
Happens in every game.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It's something that is kind of a parasite. I mean, we want the players to enjoy the game without being spammed with all those advertisements. So we're trying to, you know, put some restrictions so that, you know, some of these gold sellers, you know, they don't spam as much, and which we've implemented a couple things and it's worked so far, but we can always do better and continue to improve the system.
Okay. Great. Now, two of the more interesting elements of the game that we've heard about so far was the guild and affinity systems. Could you explain how these work?
Do you want to talk about it, Christina?
Sure.
From Christina as much, so yeah, let's hear from her.
Okay, I'll take it away. One of the interesting things about Dragon Nest was even before we opened closed beta or open beta, we started, we had our forums open and we started people recruiting for guilds even before the service was live. One of the issues is that players really like to create communities within the game, and so have someone to play with, party together in the game, play against each other. So the guild system is where they actually unite and hold a community for themselves. In Dragon Nest, you have to gain some guild levels so that you can have the privilege to add more people. I believe we have a cap of 100 or more.
Wow. Yeah, it's quite a bit.
It's a big community, and our popular guilds are always recruiting people on the forums, in-game. Whenever we try to promote even like our content updates, we see players like replying to those threads about adding me on the guilds. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, so guild is a very core function of a free-to-play game model like us.
Yeah. Cool. Now, tell me a little bit. You guys had mentioned, Davey, I think you had mentioned some of the combos. How many are in the game? And, because one of the things I saw was this YouTube compilation of a guy who was just doing this amazing juggle there.
Right.
So can you tell me a little bit about that?
So I'd say about those combos, I think it's pretty much limitless to mm-hmm. the type of the combinations. Because as you level up your character, you get to choose which skills sure. you want to train and which skills you want to put more points into. So right there, it kind of multiplies the type of combos. And pretty much you just chain your different abilities in different successions. So that player that you saw in that video, and a lot of players are doing that too, I mean, they just found like a very efficient string of abilities to do in a certain order so that you know, they can make sure that, you know, they continually perform a combo against another player, for example. Mm-hmm. And they'll use also like environment, you know, map environment, like the walls, so that like the player that is the victim it will be bounced off mm-hmm. back of the wall, and they can keep juggling. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, I continually experiment with different skills and combinations and see, you know, what works best to achieve the highest combos.
And the higher the number of the combos you can pull off, the higher your score is at the end of the dungeon. So, which actually translates into like better loot you can get out of a dungeon.
Mm, very cool. Now, you briefly kind of mentioned PvP, and lastly, I wanted to, you know, no discussion would be complete without talking about it. What does Dragon Nest offer to competitive players?
So, as far as so we do have a PvP system. So when you get in game, there's a separate area called the arena. You can just move over there, and then it's a big arena. And then there's pretty much you go to the gate, and there's a list of rooms that players can pick. So right now we have several modes. There's, you know, your typical team versus team, a deathmatch type of thing. And then there's a new mode, PvP mode, that we just introduced. It was a couple of days ago, in fact. It's the ghoul mode, and it's kind of a Halloween-themed mode where some, like at the beginning of the game, some players are automatically picked as the ghouls, mm-hmm. and then their goal is to kill the players. And when those players are dead, they join the ghoul army. And then so the goal is either the ghouls or the players to, you know, you convert everybody or just to kill off all the ghouls. There's also some PvP ladder. So if you're, you know, really competitive, you can definitely you know, there's this core board. I mean, like a ranking, some rankings in game that you can check and see if, how, you know, what's your ranking, what's your status, and you can also redeem some rewards. The more ladder points you have, the better rewards you can redeem. So it's there's quite a bit of PvP, and it's pretty satisfying.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds very satisfying. Well, yeah. Christina and Davey, I'd like to thank both of you guys for coming on the show. Maybe you can come back and tell us what's going on in the world of Vindictus.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Robert.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. All right, bye.
That was a nice interview. Next time we'll have to ask them about Vindictus, since that game is awesome.
Sean.
It's true.
But
that's the way the interview ends.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're amazing. Well,
not only is Vindictus a great game, but they make a great notepad, which I have been using for law school, and it's wonderful.
Ugh. Money hat.
Why don't you...
Not money hat. It's a good notebook, man. I like the notebook. Not the movie.
Too bad Capcom doesn't have nice notebooks.
Yeah,
a Phoenix Wright one? Oh, that'd be so amazing.
Oh, man, yeah.
And
maybe
topical.
The one just for me.
Right.
No.
Okay, so let's move to trivia. Let's keep it going here. Keep the momentum going. You guys ready?
Yes.
I'm ready for mailbag.
Okay. You're ready for mailbag. Number one, Lord of the Rings, War in the North represents Snowblind Studios' fifth foray into the action role-playing genre. Which of the following loot-free titles did the studio not develop? A, Death Tank, B, Top Gear, Hyperbike, C, Drive to Survive, or D, Top Gear Overdrive?
C.
What was the studio's name again?
What is what?
Blue? What was the studio's name again?
Snowblind.
What, are you going to look it up on fucking
From?
I remember Top Gear Overdrive. I'm a big nerd for the 64.
Yeah. Aren't we all?
Pretty sure my collection outweighs me, but I'm not for me. I'm not certain about that.
Do we have answers?
I said Drive to Survive.
Okay. Samurai.
I'll say Death Tank.
Okay. And the correct answer is Drive to Survive.
Yay, I got that right.
Which I think was a European game. Number two, one of this week's Snotware releases, that's a game for the under 10 demographic, is Zoobles, Spring to Life for the DS. What the hell is Zooble? Is it A, cylinder-shaped animals, B, spherical characters that blink when you pet them, C, cube-shaped creatures which appear pixelated, or D, egg-shaped people who hang from tree-like structures?
I thought it was a type of a frozen drink.
What were the first two?
Cylinder-shaped animals or spherical characters that blink when you pet them.
I think it must be that, because Zoobles is also like a colored bubble, like bubbles that you blow. It's a colored bubble formula, so I think it must be the spherical one.
Yeah,
I'll go with her.
I'm going to say the egg-shaped ones, because I'm going to say they're an offshoot of Weebles.
They don't fall down. Correct answer, B, spherical character when you pet them. Sean, you're our official toy person. You should know this.
And yeah. Well, I was going to say that one because it sounded like a mixture of Zoo and marbles, but then the Weeble thing was too...
But Sean, Zoobles are the world's first colored bubbles. Did you not know that?
I thought the world's first colored bubbles were colored bubbles.
Well, I think they're called Zubbles, and so they're a bubble that's colorful. So if you have something called Zoobles and it's a game character, I figure it's got to be the same.
That's the French version. Number three, Uncharted 3 brings together the well-traveled team of Nathan Drake and Sully Sullivan. Hey, wait, what is that tag-along character's first name again? Is it A, Michael, B, Alfred, C, Victor, or D, Thomas?
I go with D, Thomas.
I'm taking
a complete stab in the dark.
I think it's Mike.
Think it's Mike?
Yeah, but that seems weird because it also it's Mike and Sully from Monsters, Inc.
Oh.
I really want it to be Victor, so I'm going to say it's Victor.
Correct answer is Victor. See?
Yay! It's never Victor. What I wanted to be.
Victor Sullivan. Okay, speaking of Uncharted 3, last September, the Naughty Dog president posted a tweet showing the size of the game's raw assets. Just how big were they? A, 78 gigabytes, B, 89 gigabytes, C, 8.3 terabytes, or D, 24.2 terabytes raw data for Uncharted 3.
It's got to be at least 8 terabytes. I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
I'm going to say D.
I'll agree too.
To which one, Blue?
What's it, 8 terabytes?
Correct answer, 24.2 terabytes.
Dang it.
Yes.
I know the raw textures. They're all done at 1080p, and you figure how many textures are in that game.
That's a huge amount of data, yeah.
I am the trivia god this week.
Have you missed one? No.
No, I don't think I missed any.
Oh my gosh, okay. Last one. Number 5, while Uncharted 3 seems destined to chart in the NPD Top 10, lead effects artist Keith Garrott claims an even more important record for Naughty Dog. Is it A, the studio has turned a profit on each of their games? B, the studio hasn't missed a deadline for each of their 11 games? C, the studio's past 7 games have all been given a prestigious award, both in Japan and the West? Or D, the studio has the greatest new baby to employee ratio of any other Sony-affiliated studio?
Wait, what? They have the greatest new baby to employee ratio?
Yes, that they are making babies over at Naughty Dog, much like Dog.
I don't want... What?
Which is their right?
I know about them turning a profit. Didn't they make like Crash Bash, which can't have been profitable? There's just no way it could have been profitable.
I don't think they made Crash Bash. I think that was one of the ones that they didn't make. I think they were only responsible for Crash 1, 2, 3.
What about Crash Racing?
No. Oh, you're right. They did do Crash Team Racing.
Crash Tag Racing, yeah.
Uh-huh. The answers were so long. What were the answers?
Studios turned a profit on each of their games. Studios never missed a deadline. Studios past 7 games have been given an award in Japan and the West. Or the studio has the greatest new baby to employee ratio of any Sony affiliated studio. Meaning they're making more babies than Insomniac person per person. You guys there?
Show is so.
I apologize for this show, but if you
I don't
still like
neither
it,
do I.
And after you listen to it, you can check out other episodes and other written words at www.tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases.
Yay!
If you like our opinions on gaming and pretty much anything else, which I can't understand why you would, you can follow us on Twitter.
Where's Robert the iCarly thing?
Robert Allen is at tech_gaming. Sean Kirkland, that's me, is at Sean Nola with 2 N's. Sage Morris Green is at Samurage, that's Samurage. And Dynamite Fandango is at, I'm reading this right off the script, at Blue Swim, all one word.
Said I'm so.
I don't like how the show almost ended with mutiny.
No, go ahead, Sean.
Oh, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Keep in mind there are 2 tech gaming podcasts on iTunes. They're both us, but one of them ends abruptly because we switched our RSS feed. So subscribe to both of them if you want to listen to old episodes, but just make sure you're subscribing to the one that has 8-5 in it because that's us. I mean, they're both us, but if you want to keep getting episodes, just make sure you're subscribed to the right one. And that's it. And there's a picture of Captain America wearing a cowboy hat at the bottom of this.
Which I love.
I put that there. What?
And tech gaming is tech gaming, and if you see our words copied and pasted onto someone else's website, just remember you heard it first at techgaming.com.
They heard it first somewhere else, but they should have heard it first at techgaming.com.
Well, that was the implication. Right. Anyway, yay, done.
It's the show. Thanks for listening.
Finished.
Yay! Let
Let me tell you about the proto-culture.
If you don't know the culture, here's the whole structure.
We had enough of the lackluster. Trust us, we get the kind of games you can't rent in Blockbuster. Game-related, raise it bit by bit. Yo, D, link up the cable, we'll go hit for hit. Phantasma, plasma, particle beam means I have you on the run. Rendered effects hot like magnets.
I play games by Capcom with a power glove strapped on any platform. I don't spend my dough on fat farm. Video games, I got many to play before my life expires. Fulfill my desires.
Mastering your hardest ball, shattering our stars across. They hard to cross the finish line, floating on Daytona. West gets a Kona, I get them all at cost. RPG platform, we transform like Macross.
Rival screws, buy two, purchase you R2. It came with one free CD, it's like I bought two. I hope they made part two for Dreamcast, cause games I've seen in bags you won't believe they had.
Getting calluses, turning over asteroids, graviton bombs destroyed, getting bombs annoyed. Now I'm hacking nightmare creatures, features splat across the screen, get more clean each year.
I remember my homie and coach had the most, a ColecoVision. Every week I visit, play a Donkey Kong Jr. Venture, rock and roll games I thought was dope, while my mom's was watching soaps.
I'm on the next level, I got a double barrel shotgun in the Doom world, waiting on the next devil. Armor's low, check the arsenal, rupture, the main conductor, play.